This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
It's time for AgriChat, the official podcast of the Tales of the Agronaut blog and stalwart gaming community, where we talk about stuff and things, and the stuff about the things, and sometimes gaming. I'm Belgast, and let's start the show. Hey folks, it's that time again, time for another episode of AgriChat. This is episode 182. Tonight I'm joined by Ashgar.
Hello.
Grace.
Hello.
Hey.
Y'all are just screwing with me.
Well,
this is going to get edited out, but each one of them waited longer than the previous one to chime in.
Look, I was just proud of myself for not cracking up laughing, because every time Ash does that, I always end up laughing, and no one will ever know why, because all the silence gets edited out.
I had to wait until I was not laughing anymore.
It's like our version of the Rocky Horror anticipation thing. So this week, some stuff happened. Namely, we are probably going to be short a Thalen, or at least have a very spotty attendance Thalen for a while. Because there is a tiny Thalen running around in the world.
Yay.
And running around may be overstating it a bit.
Look, it's a very fast study. But yeah, so much like Kodra, Thalen has multiplied. And we're still coming to grips as to whether or not either one of those is a good idea? I kid. But yeah, and I think Kodra had something else going on tonight, so he is not with us either. It sounds like, based on our little bit of prep before the show, this was the week of Super Mario Odyssey?
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
So I've not played a ton, but I've played enough to get a feel for the game in general.
I have
it's a pretty great game.
The credits.
Oh, nice. Yeah, no, you're way further than me. I'm on, I think, technically World 4, or the fourth area.
I haven't reached the credits, but I've been, like, taking my time extremely.
I mean, I've done a lot of running around the worlds. There are a few where I had more than twice as many as I needed to leave when I left.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at. Like, my opinion of Super Mario Odyssey is almost completely opposite my opinion of Breath of the Wild.
Oh?
I haven't liked a Mario game this much since Mario 64, and I don't think I liked Super Mario 64 as much as I like this game.
I mean, the two games have a similar feel to them in that they are both go find the objectives and not necessarily go do a level.
And they're just fun. It's just fun to wander around. I'm possessing bullet bills and flying around, and that's hilarious.
The cat position mechanic is really great. Like,
it's awesome.
It works so well. And I was concerned that it would feel jarring when you did it, but it feels seamless.
So let's talk pacing. The very first world, the one you end up landing on after the intro, they sort of show you what this cap thing is, and then like within the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you run into a T-Rex.
Yeah.
I feel like that is definitely showing the promise of that mechanic immediately.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing, because it's like, there's a giant sleeping T-Rex here. Can I possess it with my hat? Oh my god, I can possess it with my hat. The T-Rex is now wearing a giant Mario hat and has a mustache, and I'm tromping around as a giant T-Rex, smashing everything in my way. Although, I'll be honest, that wasn't the T-Rex was not my favorite thing to possess in that zone. Possessing chain chomps,
you think
the
chain chomps
is so
funny.
That's the best.
Like, the chain chomps, I like chain chomps just in general. I don't know why.
They're
I think
so
they're really
happy.
Funny. Yeah, they're having a ball.
I mean, they're not friendly to be around, but they look so happy.
These are, I don't know if I'd go with happy. But they're big, and they're chained, and they'd like to bite you. And then you can throw your cap and become a chain chomp.
And then smash into walls or other chain chomps and play pinball with chain chomps. It's hilarious.
Like, I mean, I don't have a Switch. I haven't played this game. But the thing that I don't understand is, like, I would just, like, find weird things to possess and run around, and I don't know how I would ever be motivated to stop and actually advance the game instead of just running around doing
something. Frankly, that's because Mario jumps better than most of the things in this world.
Ah.
I mean, it's fair, but I have still spent hours running around as silly things.
Oh my god, running around as the MOA with sunglasses is amazing.
I like running around as the, like, walking onion thing with vine legs that'll get really tall.
That was one of my favorites, yeah.
It's so funny. It's, like, it's silly looking, it toddles around, like, it's pretty reasonably mobile when it doesn't have, like, giant vine stilt legs, but it just sort of toddles around on the vine stilt legs and then, like, pops on its like, onion cap when you let go.
I think that's what's so hilarious about the MOA things is, like, with the sunglasses up, they run really fast. But with the sunglasses down, they take it slow.
Yeah.
It's like, this is just nonsense, but it's fun nonsense. And, like, there's so many weird things. Like, in the desert level, there is inexplicably someone from the town level just kind of stranded there. And you don't exactly know what happened.
It's got a car and everything.
Yeah.
Town level, we need to be clear. There's this, like, dude in a suit from New York City with a briefcase in, like, normal human being scale, which means that Mario comes up to, like, his knee. And his car is just, he's just got this wrecked car, and he's like, well, I guess I'm not making this delivery on time. And you're like, what?
There's so much crazy stuff going on in this game.
Each world sort of has their own inhabitants that are unique in all cases. And the city world just happens to have normally proportioned humans.
It's not weird at all.
But it's also definitely one of my favorite worlds.
The New York City one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a great world.
There's just silly things that happen, like you can possess electricity.
Oh, yeah.
And ride along electrical lines. Because that's
not even as ridiculous as it gets. It gets more ridiculous than that.
It's incredibly ridiculous. I mean, the other enemies... Other enemies will wear hats. Like, wearing hats is, like, the thing in this game.
I really need this game.
And so, in the desert level, you run across these Goombas with sombreros. And if you want to possess them, you got to knock the sombrero off first. And then you can possess the Goomba, because now they're not wearing a hat. And, like, bullet bills with, like, poker visors. Why are the bullet bills wearing poker visors? I don't know.
Why not?
Why not?
I heard someone say that this game is basically a WarioWare game, or not WarioWare, Wario Land game, and I think that is basically entirely correct.
Yeah, it's like Super Mario 64, but more whimsical.
It's sort of structured like Mario Land 3.
Yeah.
In that you can turn into all sorts of weird things, and that there is a greater emphasis on just exploring and finding things.
And that's a thing, I hesitate to call it an open world game because it is and it isn't, but every time I have spent, I have like decided to run off in a random direction, I have not been disappointed.
There's so many reasons to go off in those random directions.
Like I landed in the desert and I was like, wow, these desert dunes go on forever in every direction. And then there's the obvious like stuff here. But I ran off over some desert. Yeah. And like I ran off into the apparently nonsense desert and I found like a Lakitu fishing. Okay. I possessed a Lakitu and floated around as a Lakitu cloud for a while.
Well, that's the really interesting thing about it too, is like all of these levels have a relatively short path to beat them. And I want to say beat in quotes. Because, like, there's tons of stuff that is off the main path. Like, you can get to the next zone pretty quickly. But at that point, you've barely scratched the surface of a given zone.
Yeah, you'll see, like...
If you just go forward, like, and for the objectives, you will be short power moons by about half. You need to go a little beyond that in order to actually make it to the next world, in most cases.
Yeah. And you'll get those extra power moons, and then you'll have gotten, like, maybe 10% of the level. Because these levels are jam-packed. Like, if you're familiar with, you know, collecting shines or collecting stars or whatever, it's going to feel very similar. And they all have
Mario
names.
Mario 64 has 120 stars.
Yeah.
Mario Odyssey has 700 moons or something like that.
What? Oh my god. Yeah, there's a lot. And they do this thing. Mario 64, I remember, you get a star and it boots you out of the level. So to restart it for whatever the next star is. And Odyssey does not. You can run around collecting. You're like, oh, hey, I see one of those on my way to some other thing. Let me stop off, grab it, and then I'll continue going on where I was. And so, and it's great. Picking up one of those things is great. It like refills your health and your 3 hit points, because this is Mario. It like refills that and it goes into your collection. But then you just keep on going. Do some other stuff.
I've mostly been playing this like as a before bed game for me, so I'm not super far progressed.
Yeah, I've gone through a bunch of levels, but I also haven't spent a bunch of time. I mean, it opens up with this intensely, it opens up with how weird it's going to get pretty quick, since you land on the island of hat ghosts. And you're like, what? Why is this the haunted island of hat ghosts?
Wait, are they ghosts that wear hats, or are they the ghosts of hats? I'm confused.
It's not clear. I'm not clear.
They're ghosts that turn into hats?
Like, envision a boo. Like, you know boos.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a boo, except that the boo is mostly hat. It's not that the boo is wearing a hat. It's that, like,
it is a hat.
Yeah, it is the hat. Like, they're mostly hat with, like, the little, I don't know, lower half of a boo sticking out of the bottom of the hat, and then eyes where the hat brim is. And if they close their eyes and fold up, they look like regular hats. And they fly around in giant hat-shaped airships.
Because that totally makes sense.
Well, of course.
If you're hat people, you need to make your ships look like hats, too.
But, like, yeah, in the opening sequence, like, Bowser kicks the crap out of you and like destroys Mario's hat. Mario's like, oh no, my hat. And one of these hat ghosts is like, I'll help you out. And since you apparently have opinions about what your hat should look like, I'll shape myself like your hat. But I'm currently running around in a tuxedo and top hat because, yes.
I did that for a while. Yeah. Then I got the pirate outfit, and now I run around in the pirate outfit all the time.
There's lots of outfits that you can collect and hats you can collect.
Yeah, there's a lot of hat collecting going on. It's an incredibly weird game, but it's so charming.
Mostly I was like, when I saw the previews for it, I wasn't sure how it would all fit together and feel good, but like every Mario game, it just feels, I don't know, like flawless. The way you move around and the way you interact with things, and like, the only thing I can relate the cap to is, you know, the way that the cape just worked in Super Mario World and gave you lots of different things you could do with it. That's kind of what these hats do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great example. Well, it makes me, so I haven't gotten into a Mario game in a really long time, because I haven't loved the feel of the 2D, 3D ones they've been doing lately, where they're like kind of, the ones that are 2D using 3D Mario graphics always, like the platforming doesn't feel as tight. It's like more floaty.
No, I really like the new series, actually.
It never felt quite right to me, because like I gravitate to Super Mario World whenever I think of a 2D Mario game, and I don't feel like Super Mario World.
No, they sort of have their own feel.
Yeah.
So
the ones that
of...
confuse me, though, are the 3D Land and 3D World.
Yeah.
Which, well, are 3D. They just don't control like 64. They control like the 2D games, sort of.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing, was I tried those, and like those also didn't quite feel right. And so coming back to this one was like, oh, this feels like Mario 64 or Mario Sunshine or Mario Galaxy. But it's not as disorienting to wander around as Mario Galaxy was.
So one of the things I found interesting was the sections that shift you from 3D to 2D.
Yeah,
because those feel really good. Like,
I
they
know,
don't
I have
feel
mixed
horrible.
Opinions about those sections after running
really?
A post game one that it is driving me crazy.
But like, this feels really weirdly like Mario 1,
except for you have a whole bunch of new mechanics.
Yeah.
Like, the first time I figured out the arrow thing, like, maybe that was something that had appeared in other Mario games, but I had not actually played them, where it controls the gravity.
Oh, no. That's new.
Oh, man. Well, and...
I mean, that's like a Mega Man thing, but it's here too now.
Yeah. Well, and it shows it off to you so well. Like, and this is a running theme throughout this game, is the difficulty curve feels perfect. It will show you a new mechanic and have you use it and give you enough margin for error to be able to progress, even if you don't get it quite right. But almost invariably in that same space, there's also something that is, hey, if you have really mastered this, like if you figure it out real quick and master it quickly, there's also a benefit you can get from that. There's some purple coins or a power moon or whatever.
I feel like the perfect example of that is the first time you encounter the bullet bill driving sequence. There's like zero consequences to it. You fly the bullet bill into like a box and can explode it and get some coins. Yeah. So there's like not anything really riding on the line. And then shortly thereafter, you encounter, like, for lack of a better terms, a dungeon that you have to basically keep chain possessing bullet bills to get through.
And that first bullet bill that has like no consequences, once you're used to it, you can fly it through a hole in the wall and get a moon.
And I haven't figured out what the purpose of the giant Sonic rings are, other than like just a lot of coins.
They give you coins. They also just sort of let you know maybe you should go here.
Yeah, go this direction.
There's a lot of subtle and not subtle ways that they do that. One that comes to mind immediately for me is one that has a giant dash section with the dash flowers, in which you get a moon called Dashing to the Top. But if you notice that there is a ramp immediately behind this moon, you can go back, get another flower, and dash again, and you'll get a moon called Dashing Above and Beyond if you can navigate through the slightly more difficult section past it.
Oh, I think I've gotten the first. I think I've gotten the first one of those, but not the second.
This is a very late one.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that the very first time, the other one I was thinking of was the very first time you see those dash flowers, or like actually need to use the dash flowers. It's just difficult enough that you can't just accidentally progress, but you can progress. But if you get accurate at it, you can progress and then get a moon.
Yep.
If you can hit the little like side thing. I think it's hilarious that the tanks from Super Mario RPG are back.
There are a bunch of references to a bunch of different things, including music I never expected to hear again from Super Mario Land 2.
Those games are really weird, but they have a huge following of people that love them.
Super Mario Land?
Yeah.
That was the second Game Boy game, the one that Wario debuted in.
Right. They were weird games.
The second one isn't actually that weird. The first one is really weird.
I remember the bomb turtles from the first one and being like, wait, what?
The first Super Mario Land is a really weird game. The second one makes a little more sense, except for the part where Mario suddenly has a castle. I don't think he has a castle in any other game.
Well, I mean, he did beat a lot of, you know, bosses that guarded castles, so maybe you just take one over?
Maybe.
Once again, there are a lot of really solid games this year.
That's true.
And the Switch has got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, I'm never used to that. Like, I mean, I don't know, new consoles and often new Nintendo consoles. Like, I'm excited about them, and then they come out and there's like one game, and like maybe there's a couple other that are promised but they're not out yet, you know. And like from everything that I've seen, like the Switch, it doesn't have a gigantic catalog yet, but it's got several like really solid games.
It's also becoming the new Vita, in that it's maybe becoming the dumping ground for all indie games, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
The fact that Nintendo is at least in some way embracing the fact that like there's all these indie games on it, like, I'm down with that. because there were a lot of indie games on the 3DS, but they really didn't do anything to advertise the fact that they were there.
No, they did not. But like Battle Chef Brigade, I think, is debuting on the Switch.
Yeah, and that sounds great. Like, it's a game where you go out and hunt monsters and then come back and cook them in interesting dishes. I am shocked at how good the Skyrim port is on the Switch. I spent some time playing that today while I was stuck in Arkansas.
Yeah, I hear it's Skyrim.
It's friggin' Skyrim, yeah.
Which already puts you one up on the PS3 port, huh?
Oh.
I mean, it's better than... It lives in this weird place of, to me, it looks as good as, like, the PS4 copy, but...
It does just actually have the new lighting and textures and stuff from the Definitive Edition or whatever it's called.
It's this weird little middle ground to where it looks better than the original game looked on PC when it came out, but not as good as the updated version does on PC.
Yeah.
Because there's some sacrifices that were made, like the water doesn't look that great. Some of the shadows look a little chunky, but all in all, it plays fluidly. It does everything that I would expect it to. I was happy to run around and play, you know, portable Skyrim. And everything I've heard about the Doom port is that it's also really good and really true to the game. And the fact that, like, a game like Doom that's based on super fast and furious combat can play on a Switch, which is effectively a glorified Android handheld, I find that shocking.
I mean, it's pretty glorified at this point. Like, that thing is not as good as the current consoles, but it is more powerful than last generation's consoles.
Right. But, I mean, I think that's a good sweet spot, though, is, like, if you end up getting slightly optimized, better graphics versions of PS3 and Xbox 360 games on the Switch, in addition to new first-party games... That sounds like a recipe for success to me.
Right? Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that was great from that last generation.
Well, it hits that a couple of generations of consoles ago, I would never have played Mario Odyssey on a handheld and enjoyed it. Like, I tried playing Mario 64 on a 3DS, and it did not feel good. Like, putting aside the stylus nonsense, it just didn't feel good, but... Because it's like the screen is too small and the controls aren't quite there and the visuals aren't quite there to parse in 3D. But like playing 3D games on the Switch? Absolutely.
I mean, it's a lot of things. It's got a much better screen than the 3DS did. Better form factor. The controls feel really good, especially when attached to the unit. I'm not a huge fan of them broken out by themselves. But it also feels really good docked. And playing on a television.
I think I've done that exactly once, and it was when Ash brought his over.
Oh, I tend to play mine mostly docked. Except when I'm taking him downstairs to play while laying in bed.
Mine's definitely a mix, but I've played Odyssey entirely on the TV.
I think one of the things that helps a lot is you're starting to see aftermarket joysticks that work fairly well from the sounds of it. That aren't, you know, $70-$80, whatever it costs for that joystick.
It's really good, but it is, yeah.
It's amazing. It's a great controller, but yeah, like there's one out now that's like Mario themed. That's like $24,
and
from what I've heard, it's decent. It's not it's not as good as that controller, but I mean, it's on par with other console controllers. So probably more than good enough to play any of the games that you were going to play on your television. I mean, the other thing I dig is, like, I've got a 128 gig SD card in mine, and I still have tons of space, and I've got a bunch of games installed on it. So, like, the individual games seem small enough to be able to fit a bunch of stuff on a single card. Because, like, I'm exclusively digital with this console. I don't want cartridges that I have to deal with.
Yeah.
I have a few. Well, Odyssey is one and Breath of the Wild is one.
I have Breath of the Wild and that's the only one.
Like, right now, I have Mario Kart and Stardew Valley, Skyrim, Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, Monster Boy, and I want to say there's at least one other thing all installed, and I think I still have like 90 gig worth of space on my SD card.
I think Skyrim is one of the biggest games out at the moment. But other than that, most of the games are not that big.
The thing I want more than anything is the freaking virtual console.
I feel like I don't really need to buy most of those games again.
I just like the Switch form factor better than any of the other Nintendo form factors. So I would rather have games on that console as opposed to other consoles.
I mean, for the most part, I didn't buy these things on the other consoles either.
Other side note, I still have yet to see one of the Super Nintendo Classics in a store. And I went to a lot of stores today.
GameStop restocked them last week or something like that. But they're probably gone by now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really planning on buying one. I just kind of want to see one in a store. Just for the sake of seeing one in a store.
I have seen them in stores a few times now. So it's not completely impossible. And it's likely that, well, Black Friday's next week. So I'd expect another shipment to come out soonish.
I guess my fear with the virtual console is that since these classics units are so profitable for Nintendo right now, that they're probably going to put off actually putting a virtual console on Switch.
I mean, you pay a lot more per game if you actually just buy a game on a virtual console.
It's true.
But I mean, there's some incentive to keep doing that.
I would absolutely buy like Super Metroid and things like that just to have it as an option on the Switch. But then again, I could play... God, what's the Metroid
Axiom
game?
Verge.
Yeah, Axiom Verge, which is a Metroid game by any other name. I guess Rocket League came out recently, too, and it has cross-play with other platforms. So another thing that happened this week is the 13th anniversary of WoW that drives me insane.
Why does it drive you insane?
Because it's not actually the 13th anniversary of WoW yet. Like, it won't be the 13th anniversary until the 23rd. And at least, I don't know why, it bugs me every year that they keep doing this thing where they like launch it ahead of time, but I guess it would muddy the waters if it butted up against their Thanksgiving event or their Christmas event.
I don't care. It's another chance to get Corgi Pet. It's a chance to get fun cosmetic stuff, and it's a chance to like mess with some old world bosses that haven't been in the game for a real long time.
Okay, Grace, give us a rundown of how this thing works, because, like, I have not... I know roughly what is going on, but I don't know how it works at all.
It's, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's, and it's not super exciting, but it was fun. So, if you're over level 60, well, I mean, everyone, when you log in, you get your, you know, every year you get your little fireworks thing that gives you a boost to XP and reputation gains. But you also get some time warped badges, which are the time walking currency. So if you don't want to do anything else, you can stash those away. I think you get like 200 of them. And you can use them during a time walking event to get the cosmetic goodies from those.
Per character or per account?
Per character.
Holy shit, I need to log in a lot of characters.
Yeah. So, and one of the cosmetic things that you can buy from the anniversary event is a really sweet pair of sunglasses. I think they're bronze tinted, right, for the bronze dragonflight. And they're really awesome. And they are exactly 200 time warp badges. So if you have one character, you get those for free, and then like once you transmog them or unlock them, you've got them in your wardrobe for everybody, and then you can use all the other badges you get for whatever else you want, which is sweet. And they do have a couple of things from previous years, like the Corgi Pet, so if you missed out on that in the past, you can get one now. But the big thing is the quest that sends you around to kill these world bosses. So if you're over level 60, you can do this daily. And it is to kill Azurgos, to kill Kezek, and to kill whichever one of the Dragons of Nightmare is up that day. And they do rotate through them. And it's, I mean, it's what it says on the tin. it's those fights again. I mean, I wasn't around in Vanilla, but I did fight some of the, like, the Dragons of Nightmare during Burning Crusade, I think. And, I mean, it's just world boss chaos, super not melee friendly.
So are they just out in the world, or is this like an LFR type situation?
No, they are out in the world where you would expect to find them. So, like, I had to go to the hinterlands to track down the dragon that was up today, like, mill around till there are enough people there and take it down. And
I assume, like, looking for group finder thing works for this?
Yep. Yeah. Like, I went, when I went to kill Azurgos, he was already dead, so I looked in the group finder thing for a group and realm hopped and killed it without trouble. And they're chaotic fights, but they're not tuned very hard. So, you know, if you have a reasonable group of 15, 20 people, like, you'll be able to kill it. It's not a big deal. But it's just fun. And even more importantly, their loot tables contain items that have been removed from the game for a long time. So there's some weapons and armor that otherwise cannot be obtained anymore that you can get for transmog. And I think they drop at eye level 900, which is low for the current state of the game, but it's higher than most of the stuff that my alts were wearing, because I haven't taken them to Argus mostly. So it was definitely still worthwhile for me to do. I don't know if you can do that quest daily, and I think it gives 50 time warp badges. So it's a pretty decent reward. I don't think I would do it on all of my characters, because it's a lot of running around through the world to get to all the different places. I wouldn't have time to do anything else with my day if I did that every day, but
Is the gear even relevant? Like, does it have all of the original stats but up-leveled, or?
No, it's they're restatted as far as I can tell. So they're modern pieces of gear, just the same names and skins as the originals. And I assume that they're probably somewhat flavored to be as close as possible, but
I mean, unless they're like plus 180 nature resist.
No.
Because that was all that any of that gear was supposed to be good for, or was good for, from those green dragons.
No, I mean, the gear is actually relevant.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, it's not relevant if you're caught all the way up with the current state of the game, but it is certainly relevant for alts and things. And I mean, I got, you know, I want to bring, of course, one of the non-transmog items, and a Titanforged up to 915. So, you know, those way better than what I was wearing on that character. But it's just, I think it's fun. You know, it's this little bit of nostalgia. I think it's super appropriate for, you know, the anniversary event, without being the sort of misery of something like the updated Molten Core. You know, the world boss thing is easy enough to grab a group of strangers and go kill it, and you might die and have to run back a couple times, especially if you're melee, but it's not, like, it doesn't require a huge amount of coordination and thing like an actual raid. So it's very, very doable.
The only thing I really want to try and get from this is they have a version of Maladath, Runeblade of the Black Flight from Blackwing Lair, but it's like green tinted. And I don't remember that being in the original fights, but it looks cool.
And the only thing I don't know, I don't know if their loot works like a normal world boss, where you know, you only get one roll per week, or whether it resets every day, because you can get the quest to go kill them every day, but I don't know if you can actually get loot after the first time per week. It would make sense if you could, since they keep sending you back there, but who knows. I've only done one day's worth so far.
So other than all of that, anything else exciting going on that we want to talk about?
So, Sonic Forces came out, which feels kind of weird to talk about after talking about Mario Odyssey. Sonic Forces is not a great game. It does an interesting thing in that it lets you sort of create your own character to mess around in the Sonic world.
Your own persona.
Yeah, that thing. Anyway, they refer to it only as your avatar. It's not a bad game, which puts it like in the top half of Sonic games. But it's actually kind of cool, it's cool messing around with their character creation system more than it is playing the game. And you get more parts from the character creation system by beating levels, so it's not all bad.
It's basically Gundam Breakers for Sonic.
Kinda, yeah. Having the same sort of entertainment there.
I mean, because really, that's why I like Gundam Breaker, is to get parts so I can build cool mechs.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar. The game sort of plays a bit like Generations, except you also have a third character who controls slightly differently from modern Sonic, but similarly, sort of, in your avatar. But either way, I am actually enjoying it, which I didn't entirely expect.
It's being bagged on pretty hard by a lot of people, and
I mean, sure.
It looked like just a probably better than average Sonic game.
It's getting bagged on really hard because Sonic Mania came out this year, and it does not stack up favorably against Sonic Mania. And there's no real way to get around that until somebody else is making the 3D Sonic games, really. Sort of reminds me of the state Mega Man was in around the time of Mega Man 9. So I want to say X8 came out in a similar time, and it was not very good. Like, maybe these series didn't need to make the jump to 3D. Maybe that was harmful.
Yeah, I don't think Sonic benefits terribly much from having made the jump to 3D.
I feel like Castlevania is in that same boat. The Castlevania Nintendo 64 games were horrible.
I never played any of those.
They're really bad. They get slightly less bad on the PS4. Not PS4, PS2. And then I've heard the ones that are also out on PC are reasonable, but
I hear Lords of Shadow 1 was pretty good, and Lords of Shadow 2 was slightly less good.
But again, like, the problem is the kind of gameplay I want that's associated with the Castlevania name is not 3D. Like, I want 2D. Really, really, really tight 2D games. And mostly you have to go to mobile platforms to get those.
I mean, Hollow Knight came out this year.
Yes, and that's not does not have the Castlevania name associated with it.
It's true.
I have a lot of hope for Bloodstained.
Bloodstained?
Bloodstained, yes, Ritual of the Night is Koji Igarashi's Kickstarter project.
Man. Castlevania by another name.
All right, fair enough. I just, a game called Bloodstained, and I'm like, is it the 90s again?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, in this case, it is.
I mean, Castlevania is largely stuck in the 90s. It's okay.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We're on the same page.
It's super edgy.
Super something.
I know Tower 57 came out this week, but I haven't had a chance to play it.
Me neither.
Ever liked Chaos Engine, it's definitely something you should check out.
And if you are like me and have no idea what Chaos Engine was, it is a sort of dungeon crawly twin stick shooter. Except it's not a roguelike and it's not randomized. So maybe there's some actual level design.
And you can play as Abe Lincoln.
You can also play as Abe Lincoln.
But why?
Why not?
Why not?
I mean, he does have a pretty fancy hat.
Fair.
I mean, technically, that character is called the Diplomat, but no, it's really Abe Lincoln. Seeing lots of cool stuff being talked about for Necromunda.
Man, that's such a weird thing for me. Like, I don't really follow Necromunda, although they're the first, like, gang they showed off is amazing. Like, it's the Escher gang, the all female, like, cyberpunk murder ball gang.
Yeah.
And like, those sculpts are awesome.
Yeah, Escher and Goliath are kind of opposites of each other.
Yeah.
Goliath are all these like roid rage, big berserker looking dudes.
Which frankly, like, I'm not terribly enamored of those sculpts. Like, they all kind of look the same. They're all like shouty bald guys in overalls. Yep. Like armored overalls. But like the Escher, what was really cool about me with the Escher gang is it's like they're, every single one of those sculpts is, they're burly. They're carrying like big weapons. Like they look like they're going to do you a harm. And I really appreciate that Games Workshop has apparently figured out how to do female sculpts.
Well, and what's interesting about the Escher sculpts, the new ones, is like there's a lot of different body types represented as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 12 minis and none of them look the same.
I'd be really interested to see how they bring some of the other houses in. Because like Escher and Goliath are two of the more popular ones. But there's like Orlok and Cawdor and I don't know, a D word that I can never pronounce.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know anything about Necromunda because it's sort of not really my wheelhouse as far as just like concepts go. But I know it's really, really well loved. I do think it's really funny that they're kind of, whenever they go punky, they seem to gravitate towards the like mid-80s.
I mean, I feel like a lot of Warhammer is rooted in the mid-80s.
Yeah, because I mean the hair is admittedly incredible, and as somebody else put it, like especially the Escher gang sculpts would not, the hair is perfect for them.
Yeah, I mean that is not an aesthetic that I enjoy, but they are all really distinctive, but also obviously all part of a coherent whole.
Yeah.
Escher has always reminded me so much of Harlequins. Because it's the same like
actual
kind of...
Harlequins or the unit Harlequins?
No, the unit. The Harlequin unit. Because it's kind of the same thing going on, just in a different way.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. Harlequins have cleaner lines. Like, these are definitely, like, there's that heavy punk element going on. And, like, yeah, not as I agree with Grace, like, not really my aesthetic, but they look cool. There's a bunch of... This is one of those, like, there's a bunch of stuff I appreciate about the way these minis look, even if I don't actually want to buy and assemble and paint them myself.
I mean, a lot of this stuff is really based on the 2080 comics. Judge Dredd, Rogue Warrior, God, Strontium Dog, not Rogue Warrior, Rogue Trooper, Slain, like, that whole... British sci-fi broken ass future era of comics that was super big in the UK. And like a lot of the Necromunda stuff comes like straight from Judge Dredd. Because really most of the Games Workshop stuff is their version of a property that they liked from someone else.
Which is really, really funny to me, considering that that's also the entirety of Blizzard's catalog.
Yup.
And now we are starting to see other studios building their stuff on, or not starting, we have been seeing for a while, other studios building their stuff off of Blizzard stuff looking cool that they thought was cool. In other Games Workshop news, the Tyranids Codex dropped recently. I've been flipping through that because I find it fascinating. Apparently, I don't really follow Tyranids very much because they're not really my faction. But apparently they have not generally been in a great place for like 3 or 4 editions now. And most people were mostly expecting a kind of meh codex like they have gotten for the last several editions now. But evidently this new one is meta-defining. It's like changing the way everyone is building lists because they're like, what if I have to deal with Tyranids? Which I think is great. It means that there's more variety in the game scene, and also Tyranid players who weren't happy before now suddenly have like a really cool looking army. And if you want giant clawed Zerglings, and I guess Zerg notlings,
it's funny to me how Tyranids have morphed over the years from this is a ripoff of Aliens to this is a ripoff of the Zerg.
The Zerg ripoff of Tyranids?
Yes.
I don't think so. I don't know. I think, like, Gene Stealers came long before Tyranids.
Yeah, but, like, Hormagons and stuff are basically Zerglings, and they existed before Starcraft, I think.
I'm not sure. Like, that's the thing, is I'm not really sure. I know Gene Stealers existed prior to Starcraft. I am not sure if Tyranids as a whole existed prior to StarCraft.
Ah, okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Kind of interesting thought.
Gene Stealers.
1998?
Yeah, 93 is when Tyranids started to show up. So yeah, technically they were first. So
okay,
I'm guessing Zerg
is... By 5 years.
Yeah. So Zerg is probably a ripoff of Tyranids.
I mean, I was pretty sure that there was nothing in StarCraft that wasn't a ripoff of 40K.
But Tyranids didn't exist before 93. Like, but Gene Stealers did well ahead of that.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. Apparently, in the original release of Tyranids, the principal unit was the Zoat, which does not exist at all anymore. And the Zoat were those weird little centaur enslaved creatures.
Oh, weird.
And the Zoats were things that were like available back in the Rogue Trader days.
Weird.
Huh. I feel like Tyranids were maybe them trying to come up with a reason to have like all these weird units that they created back during Rogue Trader.
I mean, that's probably fair. Although now it's interesting because they really are a really close Zerg analog. Like there's a bunch of really similar units, including like there's like the floating bubble dudes that are basically like overlords. But yeah, I continue to be happy with the way they're doing these Codex releases, because I feel like they're keeping things interesting. And it isn't just like, oh, Space Marines were the first and the best forever.
And Craftworld Eldar is pretty soon, isn't it?
Craftworld Eldar came out recently, and it wasn't like earth-shattering, but it changed a whole bunch of point costs that made it a lot more functional and gave you a lot more options.
I mean, also they nerfed the overpowered Eldar option.
Oh, they gutted that. There was a FAQ today that basically took the Yanari, which is if you want to play Eldar, Craftworld Eldar and Dark Eldar and Harlequins all in the same army, this is how you do it. And they were crazy strong.
That seems broken.
Well, it was crazy strong, and you gave up the passives for each of those in order to get the Yanari passive, and the Yanari passive was insanely powerful. And probably overly powerful and let you do some things like interrupt your opponent's turn that probably didn't need to happen. But their answer this week was apparently to say, no, you should actually play Craft Worlds or Dark Eldar or Harlequins and not just everything is Yanari. So we're going to gut that passive.
Do they have a Dark Eldar codex yet?
It's not out yet. I mean, the Dark Eldar stuff has been updated and they're decent, but they haven't gotten a codex yet. It's not unlike previous editions where because they changed a bunch of the core rules this time around, everyone got an update all at once a little earlier this year. So everybody's got every army has rules from within the last year, and then they're releasing codexes which kind of expand on those. Though haven't yet run into a situation where I felt like the codex is just overwhelmingly stronger than the update, and they've announced their last two for the year, which are Blood Angels and Dark Angels. Big shocker.
So, Chaos Marines.
Sparkly.
Yeah, we were joking about this early in the week, because like Dark Angels are absolutely edgelords, but I would probably be likely to play them if I was being forced to play one of the stock chapters, or at least one of the popular stock chapters, because I feel like there's a lot of different tiers of Space Marine chapters. There's like the big ones like Blood Angels and Space Wolves and Ultramarines, and then there's all the weird little obscure ones that are going to be hard to find models for.
Yeah.
Although there's roll your own.
Yep.
I always tended to do the roll your own option, but if you like spending money, there's lots of cool stuff on Forge World for all of these weird, obscure chapters. like if you really like spending money, like lots of money, that's an option.
If you really just have way more money than you know what to do with, then get yourself a Death Corps of Krieg army, which is the Imperial Guard army that is entirely from Forge World.
Yes.
No, nobody needs that.
Why is that a thing?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess because Forge World likes money is probably why that's a thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's because
Forge World really likes money, because you really need drop pods to bring your troops onto the battlefield.
You really need a a 1,200-pound flyer for your Tau.
How many points is that?
It's like 2,001.
And you can get,
one is important, huh?
You can get Thunderhawk gunships for your Space Marines to transport an entire, like, battalion of troops at once.
I mean, so, admittedly, I make fun of this, but I do like that level exists. Like, the rabbit hole goes really deep, which I like, because it's a lot harder to run into the problem where, oh, this game seems interesting, but there's no faction I like, or there's no aesthetic I like, or whatever. Like, you can make an aesthetic happen that you like, almost certainly. And if you come up with your own aesthetic, it probably works. Like, I'm working on a House Stalwart-themed Imperial Guard army. And, like, that would be nonsense, but it works.
Well, especially if you dig into the lore of, like, the lesser-known chapters of Space Marines and things like that, there is one that is tailor-suited to whatever kind of armor you want to build. Like, do you want to build a super mobile Space Marine army that has only assault options? Then, Gretch, you've got the White Scars.
Yep.
You made this happen. They're entirely mobile.
Oh, hey, did you like this? Do you like the idea of this chapter but don't like the color blue? Cool. There's a probably a successor chapter in a completely different color. Go for it. It's like that, it's like the thing about world building, creating enough space for people to get creative in it. Because, I mean, at the point at which you're making your own chapter or whatever, you're basically just writing fanfic. But the game openly, I mean, in every rule book, the game openly encourages you to do this.
And I guess for me, the main reason why I always did that is because I started during the Rogue Trader era when the game was more RPG than war game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have the whole, like, hey, here's a bunch of ideas. And if you don't like any of these ideas, come up with your own.
Like, one of the things that was most eye-opening for me back in the day was, like, there was a section in the back of the Rogue Trader book where it's like, here, we're going to kit-bash some vehicles together. So, like, watch us build this speeder out of a deodorant bottle. And that's the sort of stuff that would, like, never have been suggested during the 90s era of Games Workshop. But it was awesome to see it back in the day, because they didn't have any vehicles back then.
Yeah, they're kind of moving away from that sort of thing a bit, where they're like, hey, here's how to build some really cool stuff from scratch. But they do have, like, hey, you know, the Imperial Guard book has, like, an entire page of, hey, here's some alternate setups for your Imperial Guard if you want to look completely different from the ones that you can actually get. Well, let, you know, you can source parts from a bunch of different places and look cool.
That was the one thing I liked about Imperial Guard stuff, is basically you had a core chassis that was then used by a bunch of different variants.
Yeah.
Like, that Chimera chassis is used by a bunch of stuff, just swapping out weapons platforms for whatever you wanted to do. And, like, I've seen people build upon that and with magnets create a functionally, like, a vehicle that they can swap out to whichever one that they wanted to play that day.
That's always fun.
Because I think a Basilisk and a Chimera and a Manticore are all basically the same vehicle, just with slightly different modifications. Well, that was some nostalgia for 40K, and have any other topics that we wanted to discuss?
I don't know. What else is coming out this year?
Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is coming out December 1st.
Oh, Lord.
Curse of Osiris DLC pack for Destiny is December 5th.
I mean, the new DLC for Horizon Zero Dawn just came out, but I'm waiting for the holiday when I have a couple of days at home to just live in there for a while.
Nice.
That's discussed. Battleship Brigade comes out in 2 days.
Oh, man. I'm excited. I'm super excited about Battleship Brigade because I'm going on a trip, so I know what I'm going to be doing if I can get a Switch copy. Or maybe I'll just buy a Switch copy, even if I can't get one. I love Battleship Brigade as a concept. I hope the game is as good as it is in my mind.
I mean, Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon came out, didn't it?
Yeah, they came out on Friday, same day as Skyrim. I haven't picked either one up and don't really plan to before the end of the year, because Monster Hunter Stories got my monster rating fix in. Speaking of which, Monster Hunter Stories is great.
Is that the new one?
Everyone keeps saying that until somebody else plays it. Monster Hunter Stories is a 3DS game that is talked about it a bit when it came out. It's not Monster Hunter World, which is probably what you're thinking of.
Oh, okay.
It is a monster raising game, Pokemon like sort of.
So I was looking at upcoming release lists, and we may be, like, other than the ones that we just mentioned, we may be finally out of the woods on phenomenal releases this year.
Historically, December is not a great time to release games.
No.
I mean, Doom VR and Fallout 4 VR release, but I don't necessarily care about either. But it's been a crazy year, just like looking through the list of things that are released. There's a lot of big games that came out.
Yeah, this year has been nuts.
I feel like it's going to be one of those years that, like, it'll be difficult to narrow down for our Games of the Year show. I mean, it always sort of is, but...
But I feel like this year may be a year where everybody is going to have a different Game of the Year, and they're all going to be pretty valid choices.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
I feel like... Do we vote for 3 for Game of the Year?
Traditionally, like...
I said 3, and last year, 2 people voted for 6.
Look,
yeah, well.
Look, I cheated the system. It's okay. Tam cheated the system. It's okay.
Maybe we should just go with the 5.
This year, I have 2. And, like, there are other good games, but none of them are in that. None of them are, maybe Mario Odyssey will hit 3.
I feel like we should probably just start a list of games and...
I mean,
sort
if
of
I get
collaborate
votes,
on it.
I'm just going to vote 5 times for one thing. Just saying. But yeah, there's so many games this year.
And the problem is like, I keep thinking things came out last year, and then looking up the date, I'm like, nope, it's this year. Well, like, okay, so I know no one other than me has really played Mass Effect Andromeda. But it's absolutely going on my list. I loved that game. It was great. Even though not many people apparently did. There's just so many games that I feel like deserve a nod. And there's so many games that, like, I didn't have time to play that probably deserve a nod too.
That's definitely true. There are some good games that I just don't think I'm gonna get to this year. But we'll see. See what else drops.
I feel like that's pretty much it for topics for me. Man, because I don't think our readers want to listen to me talk about running around on a tiny orc warrior in, you know, Northrend.
I mean, comfort gaming is a thing that we've certainly talked about here before. And it's pretty much the same boat that I'm in. It is a strange feeling at a time where there are so many great games that I could be playing. And... especially with the holidays coming up and school stuff, and my brain is shut down to the point where I can handle leveling my 80 billionth alls in World of Warcraft, and that's about it.
Yeah, I've been kind of returning to painting a lot lately, which has been my, like, thing I do, comfort thing to do.
I feel like I probably need the comfort gaming thing more right now, because, like, my world is going to be really weird until after the first. And, like, between WoW and Destiny 2, that's kind of where I'm hanging my hat most of the time. Well, unless there's anything else, I think we should probably wrap things up.
I think we're good.
Yep.
Yep.
Hopefully you enjoyed the show, and I am not sure if we're going to have a show next week or not. We should probably talk about that. Given that it's a holiday weekend. But that'll be a discussion that happens offline, so anyway... we will catch you again next week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
See you.